fourth case of the day, Muhammad v. Gonzalez. Mr. Held.
Your Honors, good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Christopher Held, and I represent the petitioner, Abdul Ghaffar Hussein Muhammad, in this petition for review. We are challenging here two decisions made by the BIA. The petitions for review were timely filed. The first final order of the BIA was made on June 19th of last year, and the second motion denying our, or the second decision by the BIA denying our motion to reopen was made on August 14th, 2006, and we also timely filed a petition for review of that decision as well. Mr. Hussein is a Pakistan native and citizen. He entered the United States on a non-immigrant visa in June of 2001. On December 16th, 2002, as this Court is well aware, then Attorney General John Ashcroft initiated the special registration program. Well, Mr. Hussein, as many individuals in his category, he was a non-immigrant, he was a male, he was over the age of 16, and of course he was Muslim. Those individuals from predominantly Muslim countries were required to quote-unquote register. As this Court is also well aware, many of these individuals were not simply registered. They were placed in removal or deportation proceedings. Mr. Hussein was no different from many of those individuals, and like the nearly 90,000 individuals, he was placed on the fast track and placed in removal proceedings.
Yeah, but don't you have a big problem here because with your equal protection claim, because the fact of the matter remained that he had overstayed his visa and had no right to remain in the country. And many circuits have analyzed that and found that that's not a winning argument.
Well, Judge Williams, it's accurate that he was a visa overstay. However, the fact that he's part of a group that was placed in removal proceedings based solely on the fact that he was a Muslim male from a predominantly Muslim country over the age of 16, whereas other immigrants, such as women, for example, individuals from Korea, other individuals where our government currently has, I would say, issues with other countries, they were not subject to special registration. They were not placed in deportation proceedings. And more importantly, Your Honor, there are two issues here on appeal. The first one is whether Judge Brajos correctly prohibited my client from filing an asylum application, and if so, were the removal proceedings against him lawful? With regard to the first issue...
Well, didn't he ultimately filed an asylum claim, right?
Well... On August 23rd.
And the IJ stated several times he would consider the asylum claim if Hussein showed changed or extraordinary circumstances.
Well, not exactly, Your Honor. After Judge Daryagan took the district court position, Judge Brajos took the case. And on August 23rd, at the first hearing, Judge Brajos stated he continued the matter for the specific purpose of filing an asylum application. The record is clear about that. But at the next hearing, Your Honor, on October 23rd, the petitioner comes to immigration court with a completed application for political asylum. The IJ then states to the government attorney, quote, "Is Mr. Hussein statutorily eligible for asylum?" Your Honor, then the IJ proceeds to prohibit Mr. Hussein from the filing of an asylum application, and he disallows my client from filing with the court clerk the asylum application. He instructs the petitioner to remove any references to the term asylum. Astonishingly, he instructs him that he tells him that he apparently is eligible to file an application, but then tells him to strike the word asylum from the I-589 application. He states, quote, "And on the application, please strike the word asylum and enter this phrase, put CAT," and he spells it out, C-A-T, "for the Convention Against Torture. Now you may submit that with the clerk of the court on November 24th, 2003. You may not come here to court to file that application." Your Honor, those are the exact words of Judge Brajos. At the next hearing, the petitioner pleads with the immigration judge that he had a reason for not filing an asylum case within 1 year, but the IJ refuses to listen to him.
And what were the changed or extraordinary circumstances justifying asylum after 1 year? Well, assuming you're correct that he was barred from filing.
Yes, Your Honor. Assuming arguendo that he was eligible, and we would submit that the federal regulations should be liberally construed, in fact, that they usually are with most, if not all, immigration judges under 8 CFR 208.4. In this situation, the respondent, we really won't know, other than the petitioner made certain pleas to the immigration judge requesting that his case be heard. He did make an attempt to explain why he had a filing after 1 year, but the judge simply refused. And he was basically forced to accept a voluntary departure order. And when the case goes to the BIA then rules that it didn't bar the petitioner from filing asylum, that they didn't say that the IJ didn't say that he was ineligible. They say that he, quote-unquote, withdrew his application. Well, Your Honor.
So again, you don't know what the changed circumstances were or extraordinary circumstances were. That wasn't included in the filing that he actually made that was, you know, after the one-year period?
Well, in our motion to reopen, we did make an argument as to why he did not file within 1 year. But unfortunately, the BIA considered his application to be withdrawn, even though the record clearly shows that he was prohibited from filing.
Did that explain the changed or extraordinary circumstances? I'm trying to get to what the harm was.
Okay.
And you can't tell me what it was if you can't tell me what the change was or the extraordinary circumstance.
Well, the record really doesn't indicate what the changed circumstances, but he did have changed circumstances. He did have, in his opinion, extraordinary reasons why he did not file his
application. But none of those are on the record.
None of those were on the record. We do see certain references made. You know, the petitioner himself pleads to the judge that the NSEERS registration program was the cause of him being placed in removal proceedings, and that was the reason why he was filing now. Again, the BIA does state that specifically he withdrew his application. And again, you know, I asked the court, I really don't know how anyone can withdraw an application for asylum if he's not allowed to file one in the first place. All individuals should be permitted to file for an asylum, proceed to trial, have a fundamentally fair immigration hearing where evidence can be taken and a decision can be made, in fact, whether that person meets the exception or not. In this case, he was prohibited from proceeding to trial. His case was never heard, and the IJ simply said that he was ineligible to file, specifically instructing him to strike the word asylum from the application, and we would submit that that is entirely improper, that the regulations not only they don't permit that, but this immigration judge, in fact, caused this respondent from pursuing one of few available remedies for relief and removal proceedings.
Well, why can't that just be read as the judge telling him that it's useless to file an asylum application unless you are going to have a strong case for showing changed country conditions here because you've been here a long time?
I think that would possibly have been a more fair and a proper way to approach the matter, allow him to present his case and then make a decision.
No, why isn't it a fair reading of what happened here, that's what the immigration judge was saying?
Because no evidence was taken as to why he did or did not meet the exception. If the judge had simply allowed that and not instructed the petitioner from striking the name asylum from the application, we would, in fact, know whether he met the exceptions to the two-year or the one-year bar or not. And we'll never know that because the judge prohibited him from doing so from the beginning. With regard to our challenge to the equal protection issue, again, our hourglass is half full in this regard, and we do believe this court has not closed the book on the final chapter as to whether this program was in fact constitutional or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leving.
I'd I'd like to begin by addressing the, I believe it was your characterization of the record. If that is a correct characterization, Your Honor. The immigration judge did give him every opportunity to explain why he didn't file his asylum application in a timely manner. And the immigration judge did, in fact, accept the asylum application, which was filed with the clerk of court. The immigration judge advised petitioner at two separate hearings that any asylum application that he would file would be untimely, but that he would accept it if he could explain why it was untimely. The immigration judge told counsel at the second hearing, I believe it was the October 23rd hearing, that he would have to file the application with the clerk of court within 30 days because the hearing was actually not going to be for another 3 months. So there was no nefarious purpose behind the judge telling him to file it with the clerk of court, which petitioner, in fact, did file the asylum application with the clerk of court. The immigration judge at the hearing on the merits hearing on December 1st, in fact, accepts the application for asylum and marks it into the record. So the application was, in fact, filed, and any other petitioner's argument mischaracterizes what happened with the immigration judge.
What do you make of the immigration judge's direction to strike the word asylum from the application?
I believe I explained it in the brief. I believe what he was saying was, look, your asylum application is untimely, which petitioner never disputed, nor did counsel. And he did advise him that applications for withholding and Convention Against Torture do not come within the one-year bar. I said, if you're going to apply for those, strike out those words, and I'll accept it as an application for withholding and the Convention Against Torture. Petitioner did not strike out those words. He filed it as an asylum application, an application for withholding and a Convention Against Torture, and it was accepted as such. So, again, there was no nefarious purpose behind that. It was just, you know, unless you can show these changed circumstances, there really was no point to the asylum application. Petitioner, before the immigration judge, admitted, and as well in the asylum application, that he didn't file it because he didn't know the rules. And that's in the asylum application. It's also part of what he told the immigration judge when asked. He said specifically, I didn't file it. I know it was my mistake. I didn't know the rules. So that's all we have, and that just doesn't rise to the level of any type of changed circumstances. So which is probably the reason that his prior counsel advised him to take the deal with the Department of Homeland Security, which offered him the extended period of voluntary departure if he withdrew the applications. And he did take that deal because one can only assume that prior counsel believed that was his best option because he could not meet the higher burden for withholding of removal at that point once the asylum application was off the table. So with respect to the asylum, whether the asylum application was timely filed or wasn't accepted, those are all really non-issues at this point. The application was filed, it was accepted, and it was withdrawn. Petitioner has not claimed ineffective assistance of his prior counsel as to whether his withdrawal was voluntary. The record is clear that the withdrawal was, in fact, voluntary. The immigration judge asked him several times, do you agree with counsel's recommendations that you withdraw? He grudgingly said yes because he realized that his asylum application, he could not present changed circumstances that would justify the late filing. So absent any questions with regard to the asylum application, I'd like to just move on briefly to his challenge to the NSEERS registration as a violation of his equal protection. As I submitted a 28J letter to this court just to clarify that the Real ID Act's amendments to the jurisdictional provisions of 8 U.S.C. 1252A2D has no impact on 1252G's bar to reviewing the Attorney General's decision to place someone in removal proceedings. So this court's decision in Hadayat is correct. It was not impacted by the Real IDs Act's amendments, and this court does not have any jurisdiction over it doesn't have any jurisdiction over the equal protection claim. I would also just like briefly to assert that contrary to his assertion, he was not placed into removal proceedings because of that he was a Muslim male. He was placed in removal proceedings because he was here illegally. His status had expired. He'd overstayed his visa petition. That's why he was placed into removal proceedings. Certainly not every person who was required to register under NSEERS was placed into removal proceedings, only those who were here illegally. And as this court recognized and as the Supreme Court has recognized, removal, you don't get to stay here just because you were selectively prosecuted, even if you were selectively prosecuted. So petitioner's argument that he was placed into removal proceedings improperly, even if he was selectively prosecuted, it still doesn't allow him to stay in the United States. Absent any further questions, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Mr. Hill?
I see that I was out of time. I'd just like to make one statement, and that is, presuming that what the government attorney said was very accurate in terms of what the client, what my client said at the hearing, ignorance of the law is not a basis to bar an individual from filing political asylum. So presuming that was not something that the judge would agree to, he still had to listen to it, collect evidence, and make a determination as to whether he, in fact, was telling the truth and whether that would merit an exception to 208.4. By not doing that, the judge violated the law, and he went way beyond that by instructing the petitioner to strike words from an application where nowhere in the regulations does it discuss that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sal. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under